The Moth is brought to you by Progressive, home of the Name Your Price tool. You say how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. It's easy to start a quote. Visit Progressive.com to get started. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Support for The Moth comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/moth. That's odoo.com/moth. Odoo, modern management made simple.
Hello, hello. Meg Bowles from The Moth here. I wanted to let you know that our newest anthology, A Point of Beauty, True Stories of Holding On and Letting Go, is out now. This is a collection of stories told live on The Moth stage, and as one of the editors of the book, I can tell you, selecting 50 stories out of the thousands that have been told on our stages is no easy feat. But after hours of reading and deliberation, we compiled a collection of hilarious and sometimes heartbreaking stories that all managed to find bright spots in the most awkward or harrowing of situations. And in this time when the world feels full of chaos, these stories remind us that if we look, we can often find beauty in surprising places. You can get your copy now at your local bookstore or go to themoth.org/apointofbeauty.
Welcome to The Moth Podcast. I'm Dan Kennedy. This week, we're bringing you a story from our main stage program. Marjorie Kunak Tabone told this story in Anchorage, Alaska at a main stage show where the theme of the night was uncharted territory. You'll notice that Marjorie begins her story with a traditional prayer. Here's Marjorie live at The Moth.
Huya Naralugit, King Olivot, Swung a Lak Dark, Akshrouting Ilu Nalune Jut. When I was a little girl, I asked my mother what that tattoo on her wrist was. She said, "It's a tattoo I stitched on myself when I was a teenager." You're much too young to understand. Ask me when you're older. I'm Inupiaq from Nome, Alaska, and my parents raised me to embrace my Inupiaq heritage. Raised out on the land, learning how to process and cut the animals, pick the greens and the berries, and respect them in such a way that there was just no words to be shared. I knew who I was, but I wanted that spiritual component, that link to our ancestors that I just felt was missing. I found an old photograph of a relative. It was of a woman, and she had three distinct tattoos running from the bottom of her lip to the bottom of her chin. I had asked my grandmother what those were, what they meant, and she said, "A long time ago, every woman got those traditional chin tattoos. I don't remember what they meant, but I think they were a form of beauty." I had asked several other elders, and they all gave me the same reply, that they were called Davlurun, and the practice was called Kakinyit, traditional tattoos. And I had soon learned that practice of Kakinit had been suppressed by missionaries in the late 1800s and had slowly faded away with the passing of our elders. What little knowledge was left were in myth and the occasional journal of early explorers. I was a young woman now, and I asked my mother again what that wrist tattoo had meant, and she shared with me, "When I was a teenager, I decided to tattoo myself because I was so angry that our culture had been uprooted and our native community was in a crisis of identity, and I wanted to be grounded so badly. And I asked her, why that tattoo? Why one line across the wrist? And she said, your great-grandmother had three lines going across the wrist, and I wanted to have those three lines, but she was unable to complete them. I thought to myself, I want to have that spiritual connection to our ancestors, just like my mother. I wanted to be bold. I wanted to get my tableron. But I knew I needed to get permission from my family, because at that time, in the early 2000s, it was extremely rare to see a woman with facial tattoos. It would have been almost like an act of rebellion rather than a strengthening of my identity. My parents were supportive, but when I went to my grandmother and I asked her if I could get my tableron, she looked right at me and she said, oh no, not your beautiful face. My grandmother was one of the first generations to be sent to boarding school as a child and learn to assimilate into the Western society. She was told to just fit in and to do away with the Inupiaq traditions that she had learned. I think she feared that I would stick out too much and maybe wouldn't get a job. I needed to prove to her that I was strong enough to wear the tableron. I needed to earn it. With the little literature that was available, I come to learn that the main technique of giving a tattoo was done by a needle and thread. The thread was dipped in ink made of soot from the seal oil lamp and skillfully stitched in the top layers of the skin. I also learned that it was almost always women getting the tattoos done. But the coolest thing was that the tattooist was always a woman. I was empowered. An opportunity came up where I could compete in a statewide cultural pageant. And the cultural pageant, you know, it's similar to a beauty pageant in the lower 48, except you're not really judged on your evening wear or how good you look in a bathing suit, but instead, you're scored on your cultural knowledge and your ability to demonstrate it to a wide audience. I asked my grandmother, does our family have any traditional regalia? And she continued to pull out the most beautiful, unfinished ground squirrel parka. She said, your great-grandmother started sewing this parka in the 1960s. My same great-grandmother who had those three lines tattooed on her wrist. The competition was 3 weeks away, and we still had to do the bottom half of this parka. And mind you, this parka had intricate geometric designs that made our family kupak, family crested designs that people knew who you were, and the stitches were so fine, tight, and close. I wondered if my great-grandmother had tattooed herself or tattooed others. It was so unifying knowing that my great-grandmother, my grandmother, my mother, and I worked on this family heirloom, and with a finished ground squirrel parka, I went to the competition and shared the cultural knowledge that I had learned growing up on the land and talked about the importance of reclaiming our identity, and I won. My grandmother was so proud, and I asked her again. I said, grandmother, I really want to get these tattoos, but I really need your blessing. And she looked at me and she said, reluctantly, okay. Now, I knew I wanted to get it in a respectful way. In some of the research that I did, I found that when a young woman reached a marriageable age and she was able to bear children, she would receive her traditional chin tattoo. I thought, how can I keep that concept the same but adapt it to today's world to make it relevant to me? So I decided that I would get my traditional tableron when I graduated from college and felt more secure in my identity as an Inupiaq woman and moved back to my home community and worked for my people. So the day after I graduated college, I made that appointment at the only place that was available to me because there were no traditional tattooists at that time, at the local tattoo parlor by a non-native man. I had the tattoo done, and it was a beautifully transforming time. I had my family's support, but it lacked something, that ceremony, that connection with the ancestors that I wanted so desperately. I went back home and I was walking down the street and I remember an elder stopped me and he looked at my face and he said, "I remember when my grandmother had traditional chin tattoos like that." Another elder stopped me another day and said, "I remember seeing women always having traditional tattoos. I'm so glad you're bringing that back. I remember babies would reach out and they would touch my chin almost as if they recognized me, like the ancestors were acknowledging me and approving of my tattoo." Because you see, in our culture, the babies are the closest link to our ancestors by their names. Getting my tattoo opened the floodgate of knowledge. People were sharing stories from all over Alaska. They wanted to know the ceremony. They wanted to know designs. Everybody wanted to learn more. We needed it. We needed it so desperately because we needed to heal from the historical traumas. And I couldn't control what was done in the past, but I could control my next move forward. And even though I didn't know what was next beyond that step, I decided that I was going to be an Inupiaq tattooist. And so I went and I learned from a traditional Filipino tattooist the ancient techniques of skin stitching and hand poking. And along that journey, I learned even more about our tattoos. I learned they were far more than just for beauty. I learned that they were to honor the animals, to acknowledge the spiritual realm. They were also to recognize accomplishments of family. It was like our own form of literature. It was so beautiful, and it was ours, ours to reclaim. One of the first tattoos I did, my mom said, "Could you finish the tattoos on my wrist that I started when I was a teenager?" I was so honored. And I remember us sitting at fish camp and me steadily stitching those last two lines to finish those tattoos that were grounding not just her, but me. And soon after, my grandmother's younger sister, in the same generation that went to boarding school and was told to assimilate, called me on the phone and in her most grandmother tone said, "You will do my chin tattoo." And I said, "Okay, Gram." And I remember going to her house and I was so nervous. I was putting down the stencil on her chin and I remember saying, "The ancestors are here, they're gonna help guide me." And I put the stencil on and it looked perfect. And we tattooed it in this beautiful ceremony that was just healing for both of us. And as it was done, we both looked into the mirror and we knew that it was meant to be there. And she looked at me in my eyes through the mirror and she said, "Thank you." I was also able to get my traditional thigh tattoos done, an important component because I had also discovered that we didn't have tattoos just for this generation or for the past generation. We had tattoos for the future generation. You see, we believe that when a baby exits a womb, the first thing we want them to see is beauty and know that they're coming into a world full of love. And I wanted to make sure I had them. I was preparing to be a mother. Now, there's several Inuit tattooists. Dozens of women have facial tattoos. Hundreds have traditional tattoos somewhere on their body. But the greatest thing is 8 months ago, I birthed my daughter into a world where our traditional tattooing is a thriving part of being Inupiaq. Quiana.
That was Marjorie Kunak Tabone. Marjorie was raised at her family's fish camp just outside of Nome, Alaska. She's a Nupiaq and Kiowa, as well as an entrepreneur, artist, hide tanner, tattooist, subsistence gatherer, and mother. We wanted to learn more about Marjorie's journey, so we gave her a call to talk about where she is now in her practice. Here's Marjorie and The Moth's executive producer, Sarah Austin Jeunesse.
I thought we'd just talk a little bit about your story and some follow-up. At this moth show in Alaska, your mother-in-law was so proud of you, but she said she was surprised that you were telling this story because tattooing is still pretty secretive.
Each tattoo, each traditional tattoo that you get is a personal tattoo, and so it can be hard to talk about it. But I feel like it's my duty as an Indigenous woman who's practicing tattoos to share the story and to let people know, because I feel like there's so much interest in it and people just want to know and understand so that, you know, they could possibly get it themselves if they feel like they're ready.
And what does the traditional tattoo ceremony look like?
The most crucial element is to make sure that the person who is receiving the tattoo is ready to get it. And you know, I usually speak with the people beforehand and talk about why they're getting it and, you know, what the purpose of the design, why did they choose it, or in some cases, I design it for them. And then once we do the actual tattooing, I usually like to light my fuel oil lamp that I was talking about in the story. I view myself as just like a tool for the ancestors to guide me in putting the tattoo on the person. And so it's kind of a very meditative time for both me and the person receiving the tattoo as well. After a huge tattoo is done, like something on the face, we like to have the person say their name again out loud so that the ancestors recognize and acknowledge that person. So the ceremony is what's really important when getting this traditional tattoo, because it's not about the ink that's in there. It's about the process. It's about how that person got there and what that person will be coming out after.
What are some of the other ways that you connect to your ancestors and keep your culture thriving?
I'm trying to learn and speak our traditional language of Inca is something that keeps me connected and keeps my daughter connected. Being a good mother, of course, is one of the ways I feel like I'm also connected, because in our tradition, you know, she's named after one of our ancestors, and so she kind of carries that spirit with her.
And at what point do you think your daughter might ask for a tattoo?
I think she will ask at an early age. You know, she's always known that tattoos were there ever since she was born. And so, you know, she's kind of come into this world where tattoos are pretty common. And I can imagine her growing up and seeing some women who don't have tattoos and wondering why they don't have tattoos. And so I imagine at a young, early age that she'll ask about them, and I'll tell her about when she'll be able to get hers and the ceremony that it requires. And I imagine that when she is ready, I'll say, okay, you're ready. And it'll be an exciting day for her. So I'm pretty excited for all of that to unfold. I mean, you know, I don't really know what's going to happen, but that's kind of like my hope.
That was Marjorie Kunak Tabone. To see photos of Marjorie's traditional tattoos and to learn more, just head to our website, themoth.org. That's it for this week. And until next time, as always, from all of us here at The Moth, we hope you have a story-worthy week.
Dan Kennedy is the author of Loser Goes First, Rock On, and American Spirit. He's also a regular host and storyteller with The Moth.
Podcast production by Julia Purcell. The Moth Podcast is presented by PRX, the Public Radio Exchange, helping make public radio more public at prx.org.